General Motors on Safari. Here is adventure. Excitement. And danger. Bringing you the African bushvelts of today and yesterday in dramatized fact, fiction, and true life documentary. General Motors on Safari.
Between the city of the 1820 settlers, Grahamstown, and the border industry, King Williamstown, lies the Siskai, panoramically beautiful, but agriculturally a tragedy of erosion and drought-ridden cattle. This is the land of the Amakosa. Hereabouts lies Pedi, once a fortress, round which the assegais stabbed and the rifles ricocheted during the latter half of the last century. Times have changed, and today urban influences have penetrated into the remotest valleys and villages. But some of the age-old customs still survive, carried on from generation to generation with traditional pride and zeal. The most celebrated and respected are the Khoza initiation rites, in which the young Khoza receives his baptism into manhood. We wanted to find out exactly what happens, and as few Europeans have ever watched them, we decided to follow the story of Tembili, the story I have called Tembili's Trial. Strike off the smooth tarmac road from Pedi to the right, and you'll come to a village lying on a broad spur of one of the many multi-folded ridges that sweep away like the undulations of the sea as far as the eye can reach. This is the village of Kalela.
On the outskirts of the location, a mile or so from the nearest homestead, stands a beehive-shaped lodge, one of several, its walls freshly plastered. Inside lies a boy, tracing patterns in the sand. He is lying on his stomach, one hand propped underneath his chin. Every now and then he pauses, his eyes wander towards the entrance. Shafts of early morning sunlight fall in yellow bands across the floor. Dazzled by the beams, he turns away to resume his tracing. This is Tembili. Together with five other initiates, he has lived in this lodge for the last 3 months, and like his companions, he is covered from head to foot in white clay, a symbol of his segregation from the rest of the tribe. The clay has peeled in places where he has scratched himself, but he is not an outcast. On the contrary, his isolation is a prelude to his reintegration with the rest of the tribe. Four of the boys are talking quietly amongst themselves, yet another is dozing in a corner. All six have been initiated 3 months previously, and their period of isolation is merely a fulfillment of their initiation into manhood. Five of them rejoice in the fact that today they are to be led down to the river to be washed. Then, painted with red ochre, symbolizing their reintegration with the tribe, their initiation will be complete. Already, they feel like men. But not so Tembili.
Tamsanga and the others, they want to be men. What's it like to be a man? Is life better for a man than for a boy? Can a man sit and play in the sand? Can he lie by the river or sleep in the long grass? My father say I do bad things. When I'm a man, I will not do bad things. But will it be better? I don't want to be a man.
Tembili's father is a thatcher, an expert at his job and a hard worker. He has lived in Kaulela all his life.
Tembili is my third son, the youngest of the family. He was born here in the village in May 1947. He's a good boy, but he's very shy. Often when there's work to be done, I have to go and look for him. Sometimes I find him by the river, throwing stones into the water. Or sometimes he's sleeping in the long grass near the Umyezani tree. I would like him to be a thatcher, but he's too untidy.
Tembili looks untidy. Throughout his childhood, his shirt has hung in tatters over his patched and crumpled shorts. The dust of erosion lies like a fine transparent veil over his shaven head. His arms and legs appear thin, for he's tall for his age. His eyes are large and luminous, gazing out from dark lashes with that quiet, limpid quality so often seen in cattle. Big eyes in a small face. Shy eyes. His manner matches his shyness. He moves with a curious aimlessness, the uncertainty of a boy who is no longer a boy, but who is not a man either.
He is different from the other boys. I've been teaching him for many years, but I cannot understand him. He is clever. He is good in drawing and painting. He sings very well in the choir, but he does not concentrate. In the schoolroom, his eyes often turn towards the window, and I can see that he is dreaming. But he's honest. Tembile, I say, what have I been talking about? He looks back from the window, drops his eyes. I don't know, Master. I was not listening.
The time is 9 o'clock. The six initiates have breakfasted. Putu, meat and milk. Or rather, five have eaten. The one, Tembili, has not. He sits silent and shivering, his attention now riveted on the door. Already, the village has begun to celebrate. But he is listening for another sound.
Tembili, rise and come with us.
Tembili moves out of his hut. He shades his eyes against the unaccustomed glare, stands irresolutely for a moment, taking stock of his surroundings. A beautiful day, with a gentle breeze blowing from the southwest. He gazes up into the respected faces of the elders of the village, solemn and aloof.
What's it like to be a man? Is life better for a man than for a boy?
Birds chatter in the distance. Tembili waits patiently. Then,
set fire to the hut.
A figure moves forward. A match flares, and a flaming brand of straw arcs onto the roof of the hut. Gone are Tembili's old blankets, the sticks he used to play with. The bottle tops lie buried in the sand. His years of childhood are gone, and there is no way back.
Come, follow us.
Tembili, together with the other initiates, is led down to the banks of the Bach River. Since time immemorial, initiates have stood under these willows, staring silently into the cool green depths.
Today, you are about to become a man. All that has been will now be washed away.
The six initiates, naked and shivering, undergo a special washing. The white clay falls from their bodies. Like flowing milk, it spills into the rippling stream.
Here are new clothes and a new stick. They are yours. Look after them.
Tembili looks at the clothes and then beyond them to the river. What was it his father had said?
You'll be given new clothes, a new blanket, and a new stick. And you'll be smeared with red ochre so that you may become one of us again.
Almost in a dream, Tembili feels the blanket, deep red and warm, being placed about his shoulders. The stick is placed in his hand. The transition has taken place. His full initiation into manhood. But Timbili, the dreamer of dreams, is not with the men at the river. He does not see the water sparkling in the sun. He does not feel the great tree's gentle shade. Timbili relives the time of circumcision, the time of initiation, 3 months before. 3 months before this day's sun. 3 months. 3 months.
Time has turned back. It is the night before the initiation ceremony. Timbili is alone in his hut. But as the moon rises on this his last night of freedom, Timbili is listening for all his worth, listening to the sounds of the night, to the distant lowing of cattle, the call of a nightjar, and the lonely strumming of a guitar. The sounds carry clearly into the silence of his hut. He listens to each of them, individually, his face a ghostly white mask in the darkness. He closes his eyes and dozes. An image of a knife hangs above his head. It is pointing towards his loins, held rigid between the hooves of a bull that snorts fire from its nostrils. Flames of a hellish bonfire beat against his eyeballs, and through the smoky haze weave the phantom figures of the dancers, moving in ever-tightening circles. The knife moves down. The dancers move closer and closer and closer. The moment is at hand. It is midday, hot and sultry. The dust rises and hangs in the humid air. All morning, men have been gathering at the kraal of Tembili's father. A special goat, Unyamitsa, has been caught, and a rich, syrupy beer has been brewed for the occasion. Toasts are drunk, and Tembili's father receives the congratulations of his friends amidst the chatter and the talk of the ceremony to come. Tembili is sitting in the corner of the cattle kraal. Round him tread the male dancers, a curious stamping dance, and one of them holds a white flag, a token of the celebrations, and a sign to all that the initiation is taking place. In the middle of the kraal stands the black pot of beer, filled to the brim, foaming in the noonday heat. Bells ring out from the anklets of the dancers, and a guitar sets the rhythm. Tembili's father rises to his feet. His eyes rest on Tembili with affection. Then he addresses his son.
Wedini ke egama lingunkoyi namhlanje kusasa nje ndikubeka kumgca wobuntu obukhulu. Namhlanje yimini endikhulula ngayo yonke into.
This morning I'm promoting you to seniority. Today, I'm releasing everything that is dead connected with you. Going all about thinking that you are a child. Doing bad things. Thinking that you are a child. You are not a child today. I'm making you a man. As you hear me referring to these men who are your fathers in the kraal, don't think little of this day. You won't ever get it again. You will get a different day. You should stop when you talk to a senior person. And stop when you speak to the headman, Samson Kaulela. Take off your hat and stop. Same as when you meet the whites, whom we call our chiefs. Give them the respect when you meet them. so that your home be known by even a stranger. Do you hear me?
The voice of his father rings in his ears like the surge of waves. But rising from the ocean is another voice.
What's it like to be a man? Is it better? Is it better? Is it? Is it?
Tembili staggers to his feet. The sweat stands on his forehead. His eyes run wildly to the gate of the crowd. The faces of the dancers weave towards him. Soon the bull will come, snorting fire from its nostrils, brandishing the knife.
I don't want to be a man.
At sunset, the feasting Pringos retire to their homesteads, the youngsters to whoop it up, the elders to sit and talk by the fire. Stand on tiptoe and look in at this window. The scene is one of confusion. The hut is packed to the roof beams. A mass of dancing figures are silhouetted against the flickering oil lamps, whistling, laughing, lending themselves to the rhythm. A group of young girls stand in a row in the farthest corner, typical wallflowers. But there's no more space to dance anyway. And air is at a premium. Every now and then a figure staggers from the hut to breathe in fresh oxygen and lurches back into the fray again.
The middle-aged men, those that are not working in Port Elizabeth and East London, are gathered round a blazing log fire near the cattle crowd. Their dance is more sedate. The whole of Kalela throws itself into a round of final celebrations before the initiation proper, which is to take place at dawn tomorrow morning.
Alone in his initiation hut, Tembili looks up into the cloudless autumnal sky, with the quarter moon burnished bright and the stars polished by a sharp, scouring wind. He hugs the blanket close. His fingers trace the patterns on his face. The night should bring peace, but he knows that the dawn will bring pain.
For my father's sake, let me be brave.
Not far away, across the clearing, another man sits before a table, lit by an oil lamp. He is sharpening an assegai blade. One, two, three strokes on the one side, three strokes on the other. He pauses at intervals, holds the blade to the light, and finally, satisfied, he places the blade in a leather pouch. Then he reaches for a comb, and patiently, methodically, brushes the baboon fur of his headdress, dresses his cape of many tails taken from slain civet and genet cat, smooths his apron made from the skin of spring hares. He has done this many times before, for he is the Inchibi, or surgeon. He is famous throughout the petty district as the man who would make a man. His name is Dumyani.
A deep, ochre-red rim spreads along the horizon, broadening into a spectrum of changing colors. Undulating scrub and grassland rolls out like a carpet before the dawn. We sit hunched around a dying fire that has been ringed with dancers throughout the night. With us is an authority on the Fingos, Professor David Hammond Took, and next to him is the district agricultural overseer, Jack Curran, a man brought up hereabouts, known by almost everyone in the district. By his side sits Dumyani, the surgeon, a proud and important man, but not too proud to be questioned by David Hammond's Duke.
Dumyani, I would like you to tell me where you learnt your trade.
From his father.
Did your father's father also perform the ceremony?
He used to do so too.
Are you going to train your son to follow in your footsteps?
That's quite so, sir.
Now, I understand that when, after the operation is performed, certain herbs are used to promote healing. Who supplies these herbs?
The father of the son has to get them ready and keep them for when he comes along.
Oh, I see. You yourself do not dig them up in the field?
No.
Would you tell me what you use for your work? What kind of implement you use?
Manditi lendo usikangayo indoni umkonto imela indoni zinsimbi elofini som.
Zinsimbi is like a pine so can zinsimbi ndiyazo.
Umkonto was Xhosa, but the ordinary assegai used by the Xhosa.
I see, it's an assegai head. Are you also a, what we call a diviner, or ikeha, or a herbalist, ikwele, or are you just a surgeon? It's entirely confined to this type of thing that he does. So you are not a witch doctor?
No.
Why do you wear this very interesting dress?
This is Nubo Sako. This Dalo Saso, Silauland Unikanyagan.
Silaula Pangachosa, Sisevenza, Ginduban Fellows.
It is a special uniform that was prescribed or made up a long time back, especially for this purpose.
I understand to say it's rather like a European doctor's white jacket.
Quite right.
I see.
Laughing, Dumyani rises. Dawn is about to break, and he must dress for the ceremony. The crowds gather at the cattle kraal. A young gringo nearby explains what is to happen.
The boys concerned who are going to be circumcised are still there in the hut. Now, the band physician will come along to the people outside here and mix with the crowd. And from here, he goes exactly to the spot where he's going to circumcise the boy. The boys now are getting ready in the hut. And the one concerned now is a bit conscious of what is going to take place now. And more or less, he's a bit shaky somehow or other, because he knows exactly what's going to take place.
The one concerned is Tembili. He stands at the entrance to the hut, holding the white flag, flanked by the elders who will lead him to the Lodge of Circumcision. His eyes are on the distant hills, now golden in the early morning sunshine. A quiet word from one of the elders, and he begins to move, walking with long, slow strides towards the lodge. The crowd fall into procession behind, rejoicing and jubilant. Inside the lodge, the room is bare, except for a small stool that rests in the center. It has been built with loving care by the finger women in the traditional Nguni style. The procession approaches. The doorway darkens. Tembili stands, his white flag held close to his chest at the entrance. Then he moves to take up a position in front of the stool. The crowd streams in behind him. Silence falls as they wait for the arrival of Dumyani. A fly circles Tenvili's head, settles on his ear, then moves steadily across his jaw. The sweat pours down his face, deep furrows in red ochre. The sun streams through the door, and it is blotted out. In full regalia, under his towering baboon fur headdress, Dumyani moves towards the initiate, his assegai blade glinting like blue fire. The phantom bull with the knife. Still he stands, his eyes fixed on the face before him. The bull moves closer. And then pain, searing, burning pain. The blanket slips from his shoulders and falls redder than red to the floor.
Again next week for another story of the African bushbelt. It might be fact, it might be fiction, in General Motors on Safari. Brought to you by General Motors South African, manufacturers of Cadillac, Buick, Oldsmobile, Pontiac, Chevrolet, Beaumont, Vauxhall, Opel, Holden, Bedford, and GMC Motor Vehicles.